Welcome to the world today. I want to welcome you to the latest edition of The World Today. My name is Frank Weltner, and I'm the librarian for Jewwatch, which is a scholarly website, at www.jewwatch.com. Jewwatch brings you news stories that are fast-breaking about the Jewish New World Order, which is a threat to all of us today, whether we live in Europe or the United States or in Africa or anywhere else in the world at large. All of us today are victims of the banking swindle, which envelops the globe like a net and makes it into a colony for the Jewish supremacists who sit atop these banks and collect the work money that each of us earn, so that when we buy a house or a car, or when we take out a loan, we have to pay these Jewish supremacists through their banking system, through the credit cards, through the car loan, through the house loan, so that we work many, many more hours just to support this Jewish supremacy, and we would be much better off without it. And we need to be finding a way to accomplish our independence from this type of Jewish hegemony over our work and over our lives and over our women and our children. The United States today is suffering from immigration, which was enforced upon us by Jewish supremacists. I can give you the names of the Jews who are responsible for this particular atrocity that has taken place. And it's a form of genocide because it is a government-sponsored program that results in the removal of one group of people and the replacement by other groups of people. The Jewish supremacists who were behind the immigration policy started with Manuel Seller of New York, a senator in the United States Congress. Mr. Seller spent his life trying to open immigration to non-white individuals. His first success occurred in the 1940s and 50s when he was able to pass a law that allowed Chinese women who were the wives of American servicemen and ambassadorial staff in China and in Taiwan to come to the United States and to become citizens. Until that time, it was almost impossible for a Chinese person or a person from Africa to come to the United States and even hope to become a citizen, much less come in through the airport. We had a country that was basically a white country. 90% of the people who lived here in 1965, when these immigration acts were passed by the Jews of New York and of New Jersey, were highly civilized white Christian Europeans. Now, some of us weren't Christian, but we came out of the Christian tradition. We came from what was known as Christendom, which stretched all over Europe. We certainly weren't Muslims. We certainly weren't Jewish. At least most of us weren't Jewish, but there was that tiny number that was tolerated. And it was that tiny number that has spelled our undoing. You have to realize that very, very few people can have a tremendous influence on government and on the future course of history. Now let's take, for instance, the beginning of Christianity. Christianity began basically with just a few people following Jesus Christ around in the Mediterranean, whether you believe in him or not. Let's just assume that that is the case. Shortly after that, when he died, a lot of his followers became disheartened, but a few of them continued, and one person who used to persecute them, as the legend goes, by the name of Saul of Tarsus, had a conversion, and he changed the entire religion and began preaching, not to the Jews, because the Jews basically kicked him out of every city that he tried to preach in, but to the Gentiles. And he changed the religion entirely, and he was just one of few. But what happened was, 300 years later, what he preached took over the entire Roman Empire. And then during the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages, it had spread all over Europe to the point where everyone knew the Christian story, believed the Christian story, built huge cathedrals. People who were artists made beautiful paintings and sculptures and gardens that basically were for the church and for the people of the church. And the great musicians of the church, like Johannes Sebastian Bach, wrote some of the most beautiful music that has ever been conceived of or played in the world at large. And if you ever have the opportunity, as I have, to visit the large Reims Cathedral in France and hear the organist playing a Bach music which rings throughout that huge vaulted ceiling and off of the older walls that are there, it is extremely spiritual and extremely moving. There's a certain eeriness and loneliness and yet divinity about the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Had the Jews of Europe been able to do what they have done here in America, which was to bring Negroes and Chinese and other people, Mexicans for instance, into the world of Europe, Johann Sebastian Bach would never have been able to have played in a cathedral. In fact, there might not have been a cathedral at all. Although the Mexicans themselves have built huge cathedrals based upon the cathedrals of ancient Europe, and the Spanish did also. I believe that if the mestizo Mexicans who come to the United States had been in Europe, such a occurrence would never have happened. It took this special feeling of Christendom, of people of the white race who bonded together, knowing that they were a part of the divinity of the world, not having to cope with the foreigners that we've had to cope with here in the United States, which has brought down the learning curve in all of our schools. I don't think that any cathedrals could have been built under those situations. There's a certain amount of chaos that comes into a society under a Jewish world order in which immigration becomes manifest through the manipulations of Jewish people concerning the governments, in which they tell them, look, you need more immigrants here, and we, who are the minority, will tell you exactly what you need, and if you don't allow us to tell you, we're not going to give you the money to run your government, and since we own the banks almost totally, you're just out of luck if you think that you can deal in the world without us, because we can bring your government down to ruin at any time we want. And if we can't do that, we can start a war with our other friends around the world who have themselves been instrumental in penetrating other governments, and we can bring them against you and not only wipe out your money supply, but we can also take over your kingdom, your presidency, and we can also bring you to trial. And this has been done many, many times in the past, where governments have been overrun, and the persons running them, especially the generals, have been incarcerated and placed into dungeons. We who have been the victims of this Jewish supremacy and this Jewish world hegemony, it's a form of colonialism, by the way, where the Jews, first of all, penetrate and colonialize the countries in which they live. Although they're only a small part of our nation, they've been able, through their monopolization of the money system, the communication system, which means the newspapers, the television stations, the radio monopolies, movies and so forth, they have been able to ensconce themselves in front of us so that everything that we see or hear and every dollar bill that we spend is controlled by them. It all goes through the Jewish lens and through the Jewish wallet before coming to us. And as far as the Jewish wallet is concerned, the Jewish people who run the Federal Reserve, like Alan Greenspan and before him Paul Volcker and the whole rest of the usual suspects, they're able, through their member banks, many of which are Rothschild banks of Europe, are able to order the Federal Treasury to print money for them based simply on loans that they've been able to generate. The monetary system is basically based on debt, and it's called the monetarization of debt. People want to buy a house, they want to build a house, they want to build a shopping mall. They take out the loan is moved up the rung to the Federal Reserve System. It takes the note over to the Treasury, the money's printed, and there you have it. There you have it. So the money is really worthless. What it's worth is the shopping mall that was built, the house that was built, the car that was built. There is a certain value there, and it's probably better to have that value than what we had with gold, where you would have people wasting their time trying to mine gold out of a mountain so they could spend it. The gold that we mine now in order to develop dollar bills are automobiles, television sets, things that are useful, and gold really doesn't have much of a use. But that is what it is based upon, and there is that give and take of equality between the money and the product that has been built that has made our monetary system grow. The unfairness of it is that the miners are the Jewish supremacists who own the banks. They're able to get that money for maybe 0.5% or 1.5% from the federal treasury. But by the time you have it in your hands, it can cost as much as 23% to 26% for the same money that they're paying only around 1% for. And that's not fair. If they're paying 1%, why can't you pay 1%? Do you see the advantage they have when they pay 1% and then loan it to you on your credit card for 26%, or sell you your house loan for 5%, 6%, 7%, and put the rest in their pocket? That's why they own everything. That's why you own nothing. It's because they have been able to latch on to the system of currency. And as Lionel Rothschild said over 100 years ago, I care not the form of government, whether it be a monarchy or a democracy or a dictatorship, as long as I can control the currency. And Mr. Rothschild, he was onto something there. And that's why he was a billionaire, and now they're trillionaires. And they run almost every nation on this globe. I don't want to bore you with the history and the philosophy of the Jewish supremacy, of the New World Order, of the world colonialism that the Jewish master race has emblazoned around the globe with their huge pile of banking properties. But I think that you have to understand that before you can go any further in your studies. Speaking of studies, the ADL, which is a propaganda and disinformation agency, is now bringing college campus leaders to a study mission in Israel. Now, I think this is really very tragic that a minority like the Jews, who are only 2% of the country, can find the greatest college leaders in the country, take them to Israel, and then train them to, once they propagandize them on the Holocaust, to come back to the United States and to give conferences of other leaders and slides and so forth and all of these propaganda materials, and then spread this propaganda throughout the country. It's good for Israel, but it's not good necessarily for the United States. And it's not necessarily information based on fact, because there's no one there to oversee them, which is why they run it privately. But this week, a group of 16 active campus leaders, as well as two congressional aides, who are also leaders, I would assume, are traveling to Israel for their close-up look at the issues surrounding the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and also to learn the history of the modern Jewish state, of course, with a huge spoonful of the Holocaust and the guilt that the ADL likes to engender in European peoples. The participants in the Anti-Defamation League's current and future leaders study mission to Israel will tour Israel extensively and engage in a series of briefings with a broad spectrum of voices from Israeli and Palestinian perspectives. Well, I can assure you that the Palestinian perspectives are not going to be those of Hamas or of Hezbollah. They're going to be Palestinian perspectives that are spoon-fed to them by the Jewish supremacists who now run occupied Palestine. Abraham H. Foxman, the ADL's national director, said, quote, "There is perhaps no place in the world where issues of politics, democracy, and religion converge and play out as they do in Israel. It is our hope that these intelligent, energized, and informed student leaders will come away from this experience with a new insight on Israel and the region, and a deeper understanding of the dynamics that have both engaged and divided the Israeli and Palestinian people for so long," unquote. This trip has been funded by a generous grant from the Charles and Mildred Schnurmacher Foundation, and the mission is designed to give student leaders an opportunity to learn about the history of the Jewish people, the State of Israel as a modern democracy, and to get a first-hand perspective on news-making events in Palestinian-Israeli relations by traveling to religious and historic sites and meeting with decision makers. But can you imagine if they're traveling to these historic sites, the decision makers that they're going to meet are Israelis and not Palestinians? So I don't think they're being honest about this. While in Israel, the campus leaders will also meet with Israeli government officials, Palestinian representatives, university students, and working journalists, among others. And you can bet those Palestinian representatives are going to be very, very carefully selected and coached on what to say. They're not paying these students to go there in order to have a clear picture of what's going on in Israel, but they want them to see the picture of Israel that's created through the Jewish lens of the ruling oligarchy of that country. Students selected for the mission, according to the ADL, are all active in student governance on their campuses and plan for a career in politics or public service once they complete their education. Now you see how diabolical this is. These people have a chance of becoming a senator or representative. That becomes an extra Jew to vote for Israel once they're elected, if indeed they are, so that the Jews themselves are able to therefore increase their number by enlisting these Gentiles in their worldwide colonial enterprise. When you have a lot of money, you can do things like this. If I had a lot of money, I could go to Israel or to some Hillel house, and I could enlist some Jews to come with me to certain places in Europe where I could show them the history of the wonderful European people and how those of Semitic aspect have demonized us unfairly, and how really we're very good people. Now, this is exactly what they're doing in the opposite vein by taking Gentiles, Europeans, Christian Europeans, to Israel and then propagandizing them so that they can very cleverly pull the wool over their eyes and make them view the world anew using the newly applied Jewish lens that has been given to them. I believe these trips to Israel are vicious, and they're an attempt to propagandize our children and to take them away from us so that they can be used not for our needs, but for the needs of the Jewish supremacists. Now, the Jewish supremacists are very dangerous, as we can see in the war in Iraq, which was basically started in the White House by the Judeocons, the people like Pearl and Wolfowitz, who were able to gain the ear of the president through their money loading during the campaign, and to use that particular ingress to gain his ear and to tell him, look, we need to go into Iraq, and we need to go into there right away. And now, of course, they're telling him we need to go into Syria, we need to go into Iran, we need to take a huge world tour of the Middle East and knock off one country after the other. The problem is that we're unable to knock off the first country. Iraq has become a real problem because we got in there too quickly. The army dissipated on command, buried their weapons and waited for us to settle down, and then they came and started picking at us, which is what people do when a country with an overwhelming force and a higher technology invades. You do not hit them head on, because then they'll simply crush your army, kill your commanders, destroy all of your weapons, and then you have nothing left to fight with. They were very clever. They had plenty left to fight with, and they followed the strategy of Joseph Stalin when the overwhelming force of Germany invaded that country. Stalin withdrew his troops for hundreds and hundreds of miles and then waited for the Germans to exhaust themselves and stretch their supply lines, at which point, during the winter, he began picking at them and picking at them until all of their armies were eventually destroyed and Russia won the war. Now, this is a very great danger for us, because to have these Trojan horses, these Jewish supremacists in our government, at all levels of the State Department, the Defense Department, the Department of Interior, the Department of Energy, where our secrets have been secreted over to Israel. It's just incredible what has gone on, and it really needs to stop before it's too late. And it may already be too late. There was a story today It's actually several of them. They're leaks. Now, these leaks, I think, are done in order to let us know that there may be a world war coming, that NATO has decided that we're going to go into Iran and we're going to go into Syria, because secret services, according to these stories, and it's interesting, they're secret. There really aren't any facts to the stories. The one in The Guardian from the United Kingdom says secret services say that Iran is trying to assemble a nuclear missile. Now, we've heard before, many times, that they are assembling nuclear bombs, but now a missile. And the first thing that enters everybody's mind, since we're so propagandized by the Zionists, is that, oh no, they'll be able to hit Israel. How terrible. Well, the Iranian government, according to this story, has been successfully scouring Europe for the sophisticated equipment that it needs to develop a nuclear bomb. And according to the latest Western intelligence assessment of the country's weapons programs, they're on the verge of acquiring missiles as well. Scientists in Tehran, for instance, are shopping for parts for a ballistic missile capable of reaching Europe. And with import requests and acquisitions registered almost daily, the report, which has been seen by The Guardian, concludes that they really are looking for ballistic missiles. But you have to ask, you, who gave the report to The Guardian? Was it not the vassals of the Jewish supremacists, the secret services of Europe and America, Germany and Israel? Now, the story goes on to say that the warning came as Iran raised the stakes in its dispute with the United States and the European Union just yesterday by notifying the International Atomic Energy Authority that it intended to resume nuclear fuel research next week. Tehran has refused to rule out a return to attempts at uranium enrichment, the key to the development of a nuclear weapon. Now, The Guardian claims that it's read a 55 intelligence assessment dated this year that draws upon material gathered by British, French, German, and Belgian agencies, and which has been used by the EU and their ministers to warn leading industrialists of the need for vigilance when exporting equipment or expertise to so-called rogue states. The report concludes that Syria and Pakistan have also been buying technology and chemicals needed to develop rocket programs and to enrich uranium. It outlines the role played by Russia in escalating Middle East arms buildup, and examines the part that dozens of Chinese front companies have played in North Korea's nuclear weapons program. I don't believe a word of this article. Some of it is probably interesting, just from a theoretical point of view. But I kind of remember the weapons of mass destruction that President Bush was talking about just a few years ago, when he went into Iraq and then discovered to his chagrin that there were no weapons of mass destruction. And I think this 55-page report is very similar to the myth of the weapons of mass destruction. We don't know if Iran has nuclear weapons. It's kind of a small country to have a nuclear weapon. Of course, Pakistan has a nuclear weapon. India has a nuclear weapon. Of course, they're much larger. They have many more people. But who are we to tell Iran that it's a rogue state and that it can't have a nuclear weapon? If there's any rogue state, it's Israel. Israel is the state that constantly is killing people, bombarding other countries, and messing around inside the highest echelons of the European colonial powers to utilize their services as the colonial power that will work for Israel so that Israel's troops don't have to do the dirty work. But the dirty work will be done by the known colonialist powers of Europe. Now, you're going to ask me, what in the world is wrong with us going to war in Iraq and in Iran and in Syria? And the answer is that it doesn't do us any good. It's what the Israelis want. They live in the area, we don't. Now, these countries produce most of the oil in the world. They have huge deposits. And let me tell you something, if we didn't go in there and try to destroy their governments, if we just left them alone, they would still sell us the oil. In fact, they'd probably sell us more because they wouldn't be destroying their oil fields. The best way to work with people is diplomatically and not militarily. But Israel loves to use the military. They just love it. When they ran the Soviet Union, when the Jewish supremacists like Trotsky and Lenin and Stalin, who was married to three different Jewish women, controlled that nation and murdered 65 million Christians who were white, like myself. People from the Ukraine, Belarus, the Soviet Union, Russia itself, all of the different countries in the Soviet Union, Estonia, Lithuania. It was a very horrible time. And they're doing the same thing, their descendants in Israel. Zionism is the other side of the Red Revolution. The Red Revolution is a universalist Judaism. And Zionism is a nationalist Judaism. It's just for the Jewish nation itself. But it's both sides of the same coin. It all spells Jewish power at the top. And when the Jews ran the Soviet Union, they pocketed tons of money from American, British, and Swedish banks that really helped to keep that enterprise going. And they were able to get that money because, hey, their relatives were running the banks in all of those countries. And so they were somewhat easy to convince to loan money to Russia, and Russia was a good pay. Russia would always pay on time. Always. And the reason it would was, well, basically the people doing the paying were Jewish. They were Jewish supremacists, so they paid their Jewish friends in the Western world, and they could be counted on. It wasn't just the Jews. I mean, Henry Ford went over there to work. Walter Reuther of the United Auto Workers went over there to work in a truck plant. They became very disillusioned. Of course, see, they weren't Jewish. They were Gentiles. If they had been Jewish, I think they would have been treated a lot better. And it left such a sour taste in both of their mouths that they became very anti-communist. And Ford himself became very, very anti-Semitic because he understood the Jews were running this place. And then he had Jews trying to utilize what they learned from him during that experience to try to take away his company. And he didn't like that either. So in his newspaper, the Dearborn Independent, he began to write about the protocols of Zion and about the history of Judaism. And he created quite a stir doing that. At any rate, it is extremely dangerous to have Jewish supremacists in high levels of activity in anybody's government. They're there to control the government, and they're only 2%, and the supremacists themselves are really a minuscule amount of the Jews within a country. But they are so heavily laden with money to corrupt a government that they have a tremendous advantage over anybody else in the country. And they've always been evil and dangerous, and they're evil and dangerous right now, and I sniff. My Jew sniffer is at work at this point. When I read the Guardian story about Iran trying to get missiles and trying to start a nuclear program, and I can just see the work of the Jew in this particular story. And I mention it now because in the future it may be too late. If we start a world war and Russia becomes involved, and Russia seems to be supporting the Iranians and the Syrians, and was supporting the Iraqis, and they are kind of tied up with the Chinese in a sort of a friendship there at this moment, we could have a real world war on our hands that would destroy our country. And this would be to nobody's benefit. And you may well ask yourself, well, wouldn't the Jews be destroyed by this as well? Well, yes, they might. But you have to remember, when somebody wants power, and if it kills everybody else, including themselves, sometimes they just don't care. I placed an article on Jewwatch just a few hours ago. Maybe just an hour ago. It wasn't too long ago. And it showed the picture of some graffiti that was spray-painted on a synagogue. I believe it was in Edmonton in Canada. And I made a remark on the link that it looked very suspicious. There was really no harm done to the building. It was something that could be cleaned up very, very easily. And if somebody really wanted to vandalize or commit a hate crime, you'd think they would smash a window or cut down a tree or blow, you know, do something more than just spray paint a kind of clumsy swastika and a real quick zog, Z-O-G, on a building. And I thought, gee whiz, that's suspicious, because if I were going to vandalize a building and if I were anti-Semitic and hateful toward Jewish people, I would be destroying the building. And the fact that there was no violence done to the building whatsoever, except for a little bit of spray paint, makes me think that maybe it was done by a Jew. Maybe it was somebody trying to take advantage of the gullibility of the Gentiles of this world, and never underestimate the gullibility of the Gentiles of this world, and you'll never be disappointed. That's the truth. The Gentiles of this world are extremely gullible. We've fallen for World War I, World War II, Korea, the Vietnam War. We've fallen for the Soviet Union being a revolution of the Russian people, when in fact it was highly controlled by the Jewish elites of Europe and the United States, and it was funded right here from New York and from London and from Oslo. It's amazing. It's amazing how gullible we can be. And it's very easy to lie to us, because the Jewish supremacists own our newspapers and our television stations, so that they print what they want to print. And they're not going to print things in those properties that are going to alert us to the danger that they pose to our nations and to our people. No, they're not going to do that at all. But I noticed that as soon as I put this link up, I pressed on it just now to read some things from it, and guess what? It can't be found. Now, it may just be that the site is down, and maybe since it's around midnight, that they're doing some housekeeping there, and they're loading their server, so maybe it'll be up there. But if you go to JewWatch, you can press on this particular link here, and the link says, it's under today's breaking Jewish news on JewWatch, suspicious anti-Semitic graffiti caused little synagogue damage, but got huge propaganda return. Oh, yes, indeed it did. I mean, you know, the usual suspects, the little Jewish leaders were out there wringing their hands, getting the Judeo-Zionist Christians to wring their hands as well, so that they all were able to just have a good cry over it and to tell each other that they weren't going to allow this type of thing to happen. And it allowed politicians and others to stand up and say, this is un-Canadian and we're not going to allow this. You know how it goes. It's the usual charade. The pretense that all white people in Edmonton are evil and sadistic because of something a kid did. And it might even have been a Jewish kid, just to stir up trouble. It could have been someone from a Jewish organization that makes money off of this sort of thing, because it increases the money coming to their coffers from Jews who are afraid. And they think, well, this organization which stands up for us needs some money at this point, so I'll write off a check for $100, $200, $300. And so it's good, you know, they can pass that little rusty tin cup around begging for money when something like this happens. And if it's not happening, then, well, maybe sometimes you just have to make this sort of thing happen on your own. You know what the Bible says? God helps those who help themselves. And I believe these people are smart enough to understand that. And I think anybody in fundraising to try to help people who are oppressed by other people realize that the best way you're going to get their help in terms of your fundraising is to stage something that makes it look as though they're being threatened. And then the money comes pouring into the coffers. Well, that's what it looked like to me. When I looked at just this little flimsy bit of paint that was on the walls, nothing else was harmed, not a brick was chipped. It just struck me as suspicious. And that's my belief, and I'm sticking to it. Now, a lot of people try to call me an anti-Semite because I discuss what the Jews are doing around the world, and because I have an interest in this sort of thing, and because I've noticed what they have been doing worldwide for hundreds and hundreds of years, so therefore I have to be some sort of anti-Semite. Now, what they're doing when they call me that is they're building a straw man. They're saying, here's what an anti-Semite looks like. An anti-Semite looks like somebody who criticizes Israel, who criticizes Jews, who talks against Jewish leaders. And yes, I do criticize Israel. Yes, I do speak against Jewish leaders. But you see, the straw man itself is something they created. And they're the ones saying that there's something bad about that straw man. And then they're poking at the straw man saying, see, he looks like this. But it's just a straw man. It means nothing. They made this little straw man doll, and I don't accept that doll as meaning that somebody's an anti-Semite. So when I tell you these news stories that are written mostly by Jews and published in Jewish publications mostly, although some of them are published in Arab publications, because I like to give both sides of the story, it doesn't mean that I'm anti-Semitic, because if I quote Jews that much, if I'm that interested in them, how could I be anti-Semitic? Why are you going to follow somebody that you hate? I don't hate these people. I've had many Jewish friends in the past, and I have many Jewish acquaintances today. And I get along with them very, very well, thank you. And some of them agree with me perfectly about everything that they see on Jew Watch. Many, many Jews come to Jew Watch because they understand that the history and the articles there are true and interesting. And they, too, are interested in their own history. At any rate, dated in Tehran as of today, there was an article about the Iranian president saying anti-Israeli comments. And what he said today was that his comments, he was supporting them, have awakened Muslims. That there's a new Islam now because of what he is saying. He told a parliamentary committee that his remarks calling for Israel to be wiped off the map and describing the Holocaust as a myth had a profound impact on Muslims around the world, providing a shock that was needed to awaken the Muslims who were in a state of lethargy. The president says that he believes that there's been a positive reaction to his comments and that the Islamic world is going to change now that he has made these statements. That they're now energized, that they're going to do things that they wouldn't have done before. Because suddenly their eyes have been opened to the fact that, well, maybe Israel should be wiped off the map. Of course, they're all discussing this now, saying, well, should we or shouldn't we? I mean, they're going kind of wild with it. Some in Iran and abroad thought that the president was making these speeches without a specific plan and policy, but the president told the parliament that we, meaning the government, have been pursuing a specific strategy in this regard. He was also speaking before a group of Islamic student activists around midnight last week, according to a Persian language website named Kemet, which was launched by the president's campaign team during the presidential elections last year. The president said that the wave that these speeches created has a lot of supporters among young people in the Muslim world, and it will continue to move forward. Now here's a man who is something new. Not totally new. I mean, bin Laden said some of the same things. He said that the Israelis and the United States of America, which is a Israeli annex, are the reason for the jihad that's going on right now, the reason for the attacks on the United States, the reason for terrorism, because, after all, the bin Laden people, the Al-Qaeda, whatever you call them, are people that basically don't have the armed forces the United States does, so they have to place bombs in cars and get somebody to drive them. Sometimes they use a mule to drive them. Someone that doesn't even know that they're driving a bomb. Person takes a car to the filling station. Bombs are attached to it without that person knowing it. That person leaves the filling station. He's followed by somebody with a remote control device. And at the right moment, the person blows up the car with the victim inside, and other people around it are destroyed also. It's a method of delivering materiel that explodes that destroys things and creates chaos. And that's what war is all about, is creating chaos, decimating certain areas, killing enough people so they finally get tired of it and they begin to negotiate. And that's exactly what bin Laden has been doing and all of these other people have been doing. And it's not something that we haven't done. Good grief, in World War II, if you want to talk about jihad, look at the bombings day after day, night after night of those German cities. We did millions of times more damage to those German cities than these jihad people have ever done. I mean, what they've done basically is like swatting a fly. They've done almost nothing. We are the great killers of this world, and we always have been. And it's very disingenuous of us to look at some little Arab who might have a couple of shells that we made and that they strapped to a car and say, oh, look what this person did. This person is a precursor of evil. No, he's not. We've used millions of times the number of bombs and shells as these people. Who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? We're the most warlike people on this planet, and the reason we are is that we are controlled by the Jewish supremacists who make their money off of war, who make their money off of loaning money, who make their money off of making weapons, who make their money off of assembling troops and making uniforms and getting paid for making uniforms and getting paid for making boots, getting paid for making tanks. That's what makes money flow, is the production of war material. And these people are wrapped up to it all the way up to the top of their heads, from their feet to their heads. They are total armaments people, the Jewish supremacists, and they always have been. Because they know where the money's at, and the money is in weapons, it's in uniforms, it's in barracks, it's in the cafeterias that you feed millions of soldiers in. It's like the Halliburton deal. Look at that. There's a company that just goes around building bases. The bin Ladens. They build bases for the U.S. military all over the world. And to show you how closely connected the Jewish supremacists are, the bin Ladens have been working with us basically operatives of the CIA, which is run by the Jewish people of America. CIA is riddled with Jewish supremacists. The State Department is riddled with Jewish supremacists. And we created bin Laden. We gave him the money to give armaments from the United States to the Taliban to chase the Russians out of Afghanistan. And we created him. We created Saddam Hussein. We gave him the tanks, the money, the arms to fight Iran. We created Ho Chi Minh. We created Mao Zedong. He was our friend in World War II. He brought at least one soldier back to us who crash-landed in China. And he was very careful to bring him back to us because he was our ally. We created these people. We've probably created this Iranian president to create even more chaos, or maybe just for the purpose of invading Iran. These things all come together, and nothing happens without being planned in this world. And you can take that to the bank, and you can take that to your Jewish supremacist that runs the bank as well. I want to go now to a very juicy breaking story that proves my point that you really have to understand how thick the Jewish supremacists are and their closeness to everybody who makes decisions. And I'm coming down to the Jack Abramoff story now. Jack Abramoff was a young Republican who spoke before the convention years ago. He has been able to wheedle his way into every congressman's office, into businessmen's offices. He's a lobbyist who's been able to wield a lot of influence. And he's been involved recently in things that even seem to indicate that murder might be involved. And we discussed this earlier this week in terms of the cruise ships that would leave Florida and go out beyond the 12-mile limit and allow people to gamble. And there was an immigrant who had thought of this idea, and he had created a a fleet of ships that did this. And Jack Abramoff and a man by the name of Kadan, who also was Jewish, I believe, they got together and they decided they were going to buy this from this gentleman. And the gentleman ended up being killed by two people that Kadan had hired to work for him. And, of course, Kadan was partners with Jack Abramoff. They had this partnership together. Now, it's uncertain whether Abramoff knew whether or not this person was going to be killed. It was very tragic that he was killed. But murder is involved in this now. And this goes up to Washington, in that there are people there who have constantly been in contact with Abramoff concerning all sorts of things. Abramoff really did a hatchet job on some Indians who were trying to get a casino so that they could make money. And he was taking thousands and thousands of dollars from these Indians for consulting and making fun of them, talking about them behind their backs, and maybe not doing the job that he should have been doing. But why should he? He's a Jewish supremacist. People who are Gentiles mean nothing to a lot of these people. And that's the whole problem. We're talking about Jewish supremacy here. We're talking about people who think that they're the golden child, that they're better than anybody else because they own the banks, they own the media, and they can do whatever they want, and no one's going to do anything to them. So guess what? Today, Jack Abramoff, who has had the FBI all over him, has now pleaded and says that he will cooperate, which means that these congressmen and people in the White House are just having a fit. And he's connected with this Tom DeLay thing. This is a major, major story of a rogue Jew who has brought everybody into his kind of consulting bailiwick and involved them in deals that they probably knew nothing about or that they were talked into doing something about. And now he says, "I plead guilty, Your Honor," in flat, unemotional tones, accepting a plea bargain that said that he had provided lavish trips, golf outings, meals, and more to public officials in exchange for a series of official acts. In other words, he's not going to go to jail for anything, because just giving somebody lavish trips, golf outings, meals, and stuff like that, that's not enough to go to jail, but they could go to jail for it. Their careers could be ruined for it, and all this other stuff that he's done has been forgotten, it looks like, because he pleaded to these lesser charges. Now, this reminds me a lot of what happened to Clinton. And let me tell you what I mean by this. Clinton was attacked because of his relationship with Monica Lewinsky, but they knew about this relationship for a long, long time before they exposed Clinton. And the reason I think they exposed him was the day before this was printed in the Washington Post and the New York Times about Miss Lewinsky and him, was the day that I believe it was Benjamin Netanyahu and Arafat. They both came into Washington. They both were going to meet with the president. Well, the president met with Arafat, but he refused to meet with Netanyahu. The very next day, on the paper, front page, the Lewinsky story broke. This was the Jews punishing Clinton and playing him like a sex doll in public. I mean, it was like they blew him up and started just making love to him in public. It was just crazy what they did to that man. And they did it because he had slighted Israel in public by seeing Arafat. By seeing Arafat, but refusing to see Netanyahu. And the reason he refused to see Netanyahu was that Netanyahu was not doing what he should have done in terms of the peace plan. And so he slighted him and met with Arafat. And he paid the price because the Lewinsky affair was his torture and punishment. And he was basically the puppet of the Jews in the media and became a laughingstock around the world. Now here we have it happening again, because President Bush has refused to do what Israel wants in terms of going against Iran. He has not done this. He has not gone after Russia for giving Iran materials that they can use for their nuclear weapon, and Israel is absolutely incensed. So what are they going to do? They sick Jack Abramoff on the president. The FBI, that's loaded with Jewish supremacists, the Justice Department that's loaded with Jewish supremacists. I mean, look how high up Chertov is. I mean, that's about as high as you can get. These Jewish supremacists have allowed Jack Abramoff to slip out of their clutches so that they can take on the president, the vice president, DeLay, and all of these other congressmen. Because they have noticed that their Zionist little nation over there has been slighted because the president won't go after Russia and won't go after Iran. And they are absolutely incensed that he would not do everything that they want him to do. So there you have it. The Jews almost never go to jail. Here's Jack Abramoff about to go to jail. They arrange this deal where he pleads to taking congressmen to golf courses. It's ridiculous. The guy's done so much more. He pleads to these simple little things, so he won't be going to jail, or if he does, it'll be probably a golf course, one of those federal jails for the Sweetie Pie deals. But the congressman and the president can be dangled up and down, and as he reveals all of the other stuff that he did that's even more felonious, that represent true felonies, that he can involve these other people in government, well, then the president can be punished for not going after Iran and Russia because of their nuclear deals, if indeed they have any nuclear deals. It's beautiful, and it's the way the Jewish supremacists work behind the scene and within the media and within the Justice Department, within the CIA, the FBI, and all the other agencies that they control by having a majority of people in the upper echelon. And they've been able to grasp the throat of our country and to destroy our nation using this overwhelming power that they have. We are going to be hearing about the Jack Abramoff story for the next 2 or 3 years. This is going to be really, really big. You're going to see this Jewish consultant bring many, many people down while he himself escapes going to the gulag. He will probably not see a day in jail, and if he does see a day in jail, it'll be a jail that really doesn't mean anything. It'll be one of those federal goody-two-shoes places. And there's plenty of them, and it's for people who have enough money or enough power and enough influence that they just don't send them where they send the other folks. And especially if they're a Jewish supremacist, well then, absolutely, they're not going to go to jail. And connected with this, we have IPAC sending very dangerous, what's known as the dangerous letters to congressmen concerning Iran at the same time that Abramoff is now going to finger some of these congressmen. So here comes this letter from IPAC, the Jewish lobby, timed at the same time that Abramoff makes this deal. The letter from IPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, which is the most powerful lobby in the country. You have these foreigners, these Jews, bribing our Congress with this particular hammer known as the Jewish lobby that has so much money and so much influence that the rest of us who are Gentiles can't even rule our own country. We have to watch the Jews rule our country, who are only 2%. And this is immoral, unethical, it is wrong, and it needs to end. At any rate, President Bush's position on Iraq is seen as, quote, disturbing, unquote, and dangerous, unquote, reads a recent screed that's written by IPAC. And it's all done because the Bush administration would not kowtow completely to what the Jewish supremacists wanted, which was to not accept a Russian proposal to allow Iran to continue to develop nuclear energy under Russian supervision. And IPAC is just downright pissed about this. They're not going to put up with it. And they have decided to attack the president. This is incredible. In this letter to congressional allies, mostly Democrats, the pro-Israel organization admitted it was concerned that the decision not to go to the Security Council combined with the U.S. decision to support the Russian proposal, indicates what IPAC calls in the letter, quote, a disturbing shift in the administration's policy on Iran and poses a danger to the U.S. and of our allies, unquote. So here we have this breaking news story. Everything is coordinated. Nothing happens in this world by accident. Always remember that. Always remember it. Now, Israel continues to develop its nuclear arsenal all this time, and the BBC reported that Israel has most likely produced enough plutonium to make 200 nuclear weapons. But that's okay, because they're special, and they get by with it, but nobody else does. And that's the way of the world when Jewish supremacy controls most of the nations of this globe. When the globe is surrounded by this Jewish colonialism, this huge net of banking that surrounds the world and that sucks the lifeblood out of every worker through usury, through the penitence of taxation by way of interest that each of us must subject ourselves to in order to get a hold of those little paper dollars that are printed at our own treasury, but only for the Jewish supremacists who run the banks, who then loan it to us at a huge profit, and therefore make sure that we cannot retire early. Well, the Jewish supremacists get to retire as early as they want because they have so much money, but we never get to retire. We are always behind the eight ball economically because we have to support not only this government that wants to go on Israeli supremacy expeditions to Iraq and spend trillions and trillions of dollars, which our children are going to have to pay for, but also to anger the Arabs so that they would attack our country and take down our World Trade Towers and destroy our economy because there were just hundreds of thousands of very important documents, one of a kind, that were in those buildings that were destroyed. And that caused an instant liquidity problem, which forced our government to begin to print paper money like it was going out of style, just to keep the economy from collapsing. Of course, our friendly Jewish supremacist bankers who pick our pockets every day as we go to work, as we pay off our houses and our cars and our clothing, our food, everything that we own, that goes through Jewish hands as the money changes hands and filters its way back into the banking system to be loaned out again and again at higher and higher interest rates, we never get ahead. But they are always ahead. The more that we work, the more they make. And they just make a bundle at this. It's the greatest scam in the world. It's the greatest scam in the world, and you and I, as Gentiles, are their victims. There's a lot more than this that is detrimental to the Gentiles of this world who have suffered at the hands of these criminals, who are the Jewish supremacists, the Zionists, who have created the chaos known as the Soviet Union, which they used to kill 65 million of our people in all of those countries that were in that huge mess known as the Soviet Union. The Red Revolution, the Red Menace. And remember that Rothschild means red shield or red flag. Roth means red, child means shield or flag. Mr. Rothschild was originally named Bauer, and he changed his name to Red Shield and Red Flag because he knew what he was going to do. He knew exactly what he was going to do, and that red star of Russia is another Star of David, but it has 5 points instead of six. It is a kind of secular star that was used under the times of King David. There were two stars, and that was the second star. And the first star that we know today is the Star of Israel, was actually one that wasn't used very much during the days of King David. But now, since they used the red star first, they had to use the other star for Israel. But both stars stand for the Judeo-supremacists of this world. There were more stories today concerning the viciousness of the New World Order and of the Jewish supremacists that I haven't been able to get to because I've run out of time. For instance, in Israel today, the Israelis announced they were stopping the Palestinian election campaign in East Jerusalem because it wasn't going to come out in their favor. So they said, okay, well, you folks here don't get to vote then. How do you like that? Now, here they are telling everybody that they're a democracy, and they believe in democracy, and they're the only country in the Middle East that is a true democracy. And what kind of democracy do they have? Well, if the other side is going to win in an election, they say, well, we're not going to have the election in that area then. You don't get to vote. Well, so much for their belief in democracy. They only believe in democracy, the Jewish supremacists, when it comes down in their favor. Otherwise, they'll cut you off in a heartbeat. Absolutely. And that's just the way it is. There were other things indicating the start, possibly, of a new Zionist world war over this Iraq situation. And they're pushing it. They're pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And it just kind of takes your breath away to watch what they are doing. There was another child that was very impressionable, a 16-year-old high school student, who along with 18 or 20 others has won a trip from the ADL to the Holocaust Museum. In another one of these vicious ADL domestic propaganda programs that's designed to interest all the children of America in winning these trips, in this case to the Holocaust Museum. In order to win the trip, of course, you have to write a nice little essay about the Holocaust. And they have thousands of kids writing these essays, warping their minds, and then a few of them get taken to the Holocaust Museum. And then they're further exploited by coming back to tell other kids within their regions and communities exactly what they learned. Information that's hand-fed to them by the Anti-Defamation League, which is a neo-Bolshevik organization whose members are related to the same Reds who lived in New York and who took the boat over to Russia to run the Red Revolution and to kill your relatives and mine. It's a sad, sad story, and we need to eventually get to the bottom of it and to end the horror that has been enforced upon us by these people. Thank you very much for listening to The World Today and for visiting Jew Watch, and keep coming to Jew Watch for our programs. Jew Watch will be changing servers very shortly due to the racism of the Jewish community that has browbeat our server company. So now we're going to change our server because these anti-American racist bigots who are Jewish supremacists don't believe in freedom of speech, only for themselves, but not for those who have other opinions. Just another indication of what we're up against. Thank you very much, and have a very, very nice day. And if Jew Watch is down for a day or two, just keep coming back, and we will be back on the air, I can assure you. We will not be stopped, for we are the true scholars of Jewish history and of Jewish news. We present you with the truth, and that is something that the Jewish supremacists of this world cannot tolerate.